not going to make that same mistake. And then it happened twice. And I was like, dude, come on. Like, I need you to connect with that, you know? So then a few moments later, we know Santi Morris scores his first goal since August 11th, they said. Guzman tees up a pass to Sandoval. Sandoval chips it to Weehan. Weehan goes up for it, which looks like it's going to be a header, but clearly it doesn't make it. And ultimately, Mora's there, gets it on the dribble, and drives it into the center, and then just rockets a shot into the net. What are you thinking at this point when Santi Mora goes in and he hits that crossbody shot?
Well, I think Little Miss asked him in the press conference how he felt about that. And you could tell he was not very happy with the performance of the United, but I think it's definitely, when you break a cold streak, it's definitely uplifting for yourself. Even though he won't admit it, Santi's not a very proud guy, like he won't boast on himself. But you know deep down inside, he was thinking, finally happened for me. Like, I got out of this cold streak. And that goes for any player. Any player comes out of a cold streak, you know he wants more. And Santi is the guy to do it. We've seen it. He's gotten three in a game. He's, you know, but to break that coldness, you know deep down, even though he won't say it, he was cheering like a little girl on the inside.
Do you think we were going to see, like, do you think we might have seen the arrival of El Matador a second time when he went in for that? Is that how you felt when that was happening?
I was seeing some old Santi there. His speed is just untouchable. I mean, we saw that early in the year where Santi would break to the outside and then cut in. You know, he has that speed. He has that ability to drive the ball. But unfortunately, a lot of teams must watch film and watch him because they picked up on it. They knew Santi was going to cut to the middle. They knew he was going to go on the outside and then make a cut. To see him finally break it through and finally get one, that's the old Santi we know. And we need to see more of that, Santi.
Yeah, personally, I was very, very happy to see that. I was happy for him. He deserves it. Every match we see him kill himself in the field, and he does his work. And sometimes he carries the team. So I definitely think that he deserved that. He earned it, and he worked really hard for it. So I'm very happy for Santi. And going back to Padilla real quick, that's where my question came up during the press conference when I said what was the most challenging, you know, thing tonight, and he said connecting. So I think that was one of his words in his on his answer. He said, I wanted to connect. It was frustrating, I believe. So, you know, he missed a few. He had it, and hopefully, you know, in the future we can see more from him. But definitely I'm happy for Santi. And like Josh said, he wouldn't admit it, but I know that, you know, he was very happy inside.
Right on. So we go up 1-0 against, or 1-0 against the third best team in the table. And, you know, coming into this match, we're thinking, okay, I know that we talked about it. We were not concerned so much with a win from this. We were thinking we need to get a draw here and a draw in the next match. You know, where I had a different thought. I thought, oh man, we need to beat these top table teams. But so we go up 1-0 against the third best team in the table. We're moving the ball around, making stops on defense. Josh, I know you were standing nearby, but what did the run of play look like early when Reno changed sides on us when they had gotten that shot at about 10 minutes in? Mifeka hit that shot, and Cody Mizell just kind of out of nowhere just blocks it with his hand, and it goes straight up.
I was on the opposite side of the field when that happened, but what I could see from the screen is Cody made an amazing save. Probably one of the best of the season. If that's not save of the week, in my book, like, USL's got to rethink their plays.
Was
it a one-on-one breakaway? And he stopped it, and unfortunately, it went in the next couple
Oh, no.
I'm thinking the wrong play?
Yeah, this is the one earlier
than
that.
Was it on my side?
It was on the scoreboard side. So it's like one of the first shots, 10 minutes in. In fact,
I don't know. I was being water boy to our camera, so I missed a couple to our cameraman. So I was kind of.
So he basically is like dead set. Mifeka rolls in and is about to kick it. And then Mizell just basically kind of falls over dead set and has his hand up and just blocks it just point blank. And so what did you see that? Happen to see that?
I saw it, but it happened really, really quick. And now I'm in the supporter section for the most part.
Oh, so you're like,
that was really far. Okay. It happened really fast, and I saw it on the board, you know, the replay. But he did a couple great saves, that being the first one, and the one-on-one being the second. Cody did an amazing job on those.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, they're saying that, like, they thought that right there should definitely make save of the week just because of the fact that, you know, he really didn't have much movement. Like, he literally just tipped over and, like, blocked it, like, on point. So then through 15 minutes in the broadcast, they were saying that United had 66% possession. So for us, like, that means that we were obviously passing a lot. I mean, we weren't necessarily taking all these shots, but we were passing. But then there were moments in there where there was a lot of change of possession. There was a lot of times where we were clearing the ball and it was just going into open patches of the pitch, and then Reno would get the ball back. At 17 minutes, it seemed like we couldn't take possession back. We were ineffectively clearing the ball into Reno's possession.
Talking about the first half?
Still in the first half. Yeah, we're still talking in the first half here. Yes. We're still talking the first half here. At 18 minutes, this is where I'm talking about the save. Let me move on here. Sorry. So 23 minutes in, Samson goes 1v1 with Haji from Reno. And this is where Haji's taking the ball on the right channel, and he kind of tries to get Samson to bite a little bit. Maybe perhaps has seen that he can kind of get... maybe he has figured out Samson's pace isn't, like, one that can keep up with him. On the broadcast, they're saying that perhaps United might be a little bit at a disadvantage with the outside backs for, you know, having pace. And then, of course, them going against both Padilla and Samson, that maybe that might be something that could come to bite them in the butt later, maybe in the 50th minute when they're a little bit more tired. But for the most part, Samson continued in the first half. He was pretty much shadowing the person that he was over. So you didn't really see too much disparity between the two. So then in the 27th minute, there's like this mix-up on who got the yellow card. Do you guys remember this? So then at first they said Weehan got the yellow card.
I saw Chris getting it.
And then they said, they said that Weehan got it, and he's just like, no way. So then all of a sudden they say Moar gets it. And then eventually they get to Samson. And what it was is that, so when Weehan is trying to step in on the ball, he apparently steps on the guy's heel, but they aren't calling that. Moar is like a little bit up the pitch with another guy where he actually kind of incidentally kind of collides with him. But then Samson comes over to try to get the ball from the guy who Weehan was with. And Samson kind of comes in and steps on the guy. So that's where the card ultimately comes. But for a minute there, it was kind of like there was a mix-up.
So who got it?
Right, exactly. So Samson gets it. But for a moment there, they had to correct that call. It was, and I was sitting at a vantage point of, you know, being in the crowd. So everyone was like, just put it away if you don't know who got it. You know?
That would have been a good idea.
Right. So let's talk about this. Okay, Moar gets the ball in the 31st minute. Okay, he hits a left channel and quickly takes the ball back into the middle, looking for that same shot as before. Weehan slipped into the back and picks up the loose ball and sets up the header for Devin Sandoval. And it was a good look. So, I mean, how are you guys feeling about the collaboration that we're seeing between Weehan and Sandoval right now?
I like Sandoval. He's got a very good... he's got the momentum going. He looks confident. I think they work well together. I really like that. Like I said at the beginning, I really like the lineup. And I think Coach Troy doesn't want to break that. So he keeps bringing Sandoval from the beginning. And we keep talking about that. So he's getting the job done. Unfortunately, you know, he couldn't this match. But I like the combination.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely think about the fact that Weehan is being marked, as we were saying at the top of this a little bit. He's being marked, so I mean that's giving him the opportunity to ultimately create chances for Devin. Of course, you got Santi, who's has a whole nother dynamic going on because he's obviously looking for his lane. When I watched it back on the playback, I kind of felt like maybe that window closed up really fast on Santi because they expected him to come back in the middle, but he came from such a point, like just left of the goal, where I thought maybe he should have just drove it in the left that time and kind of, you know, just kind of left them guessing. But it ended up being well because Weehan again slipped in the back and was able to pick up a loose ball. So definitely a chance was created there. So in the 33rd minute, we see something, I guess, that we saw in the last two matches. We see a whole lot of ball movement happening. In the 33rd minute, we see United pass the ball around what looks like at least 20-plus touches. And they're passing around the midfield. It's definitely this dizzying effect because they're just making Reno kind of run around and around and around. And then eventually, we end up losing the possession. And so I am thinking, did we get too comfortable in all the ball movement, like to the point where we weren't really producing anything positive? What do you think on that?
I really think that, like we addressed earlier, too much passing, they got carried away. And they forget to move forward. So they're passing across as opposed to forward. So I really think, and I've been thinking this for a while, that they need to break that and push forward. I even asked, I had the opportunity to talk to some of the guys, and I even asked, why you guys pass so much across as opposed to sending the ball all the way to forwards?
Like I said, this is not the United team that we knew. Like, when we saw the first United team, they weren't afraid to attack. That's what made us so good, is that we were like the Phoenix Rising. We were attack, straight down the middle. Let's get it right into the net kind of momentum. Now it's, I understand this is Troy's thinking. This is his logic. Let's pass it, set up something. What are you setting up for? Like, the way I've been seeing it, we try to center it. Unfortunately, the defense reads us, takes it away. And that's what Reno did all night to us. And you saw it, especially when me and Adam got to see it on our side, when United. And then they get too fancy with their passing. I think I saw Frater with a no-look, trying to Patrick Mahomes back kick it to Sandoval. And Sandoval didn't even know where the ball was. I think they're getting too fancy with their passing. Just attack. Just go straight for the net and just do something with it.
And by the time they push forward, there was a white brick wall. So everyone in Reno was already covering the net.
It just seemed like they definitely tired themselves out. I mean, I looked at the stat after the match. We had 556 passes to Reno's 352.
See, that's just too much.
Right? That's way too much. I mean, our passing accuracy was great on our side with 85 and their side with 74, but we had like 19 crosses to their 7. So it's like we were definitely moving it around, and I'm sure for Troy that was probably a victory because there were times where they get stuck. But again, like we're saying here, like, too much movement off the ball. Almost like there are probably definitely a lot of shot chances in there.
Well, we saw it too with, what, 7-10 minutes to go? Me and Adam are sitting there thinking, you have the ball at midfield. Why are you passing backwards?
Back.
What are you trying to do by sending it back to your defenders? Are you trying to make Reno come and attack you and take the ball away and then lob it over their heads? I mean, we tried that once, and Sandoval got called for offsides.
Mm-hmm. And that happened. Mm-hmm. That's one of the big, huge errors.
Yeah, Weehan's goal was taken away too because of the offsides.
We'll get into that. You guys are beating.
We're getting too excited.
So around 45 minutes, right? Let's just go ahead and put it here. Around 45 minutes, Brent Richards saves the ball from going out of bounds. He sends a cross back into play. The deflection goes off of another Reno player, which I couldn't identify. I think it was Mfeka. I'm not sure. But it goes back into ultimately being kicked back to Corey Herzog, who's not marked, puts the ball back in the top shelf. It goes off of Mizell's gloves. And the vantage point I saw was it looked like he had it, and then he just couldn't hold on. So this is now at the point where United is obviously more reactive in their defense, right? They're way off of this guy. So, Josh, what were you thinking at this point when the score goes 1-1 and it's like...
You're going to laugh, but I called that goal when it happened. Like I said, I was standing next to Adam the whole time, and I saw that play get set up, and I told Adam, crap. I knew that was going to happen. Like, I saw it crossed and kicked in. I was telling Adam the whole time, I knew that was going to happen. I knew they were going to draw our defense to the left side, and then they were going to cross it over for a wide-open shot. And it happened. And Cody did an amazing job trying to save that. Like, I don't know if Adam sent that photo to you, but you can see Cody full extent, arms, leg. He looks like he's stretched out to the max trying to block that shot. And fortunately, just beat him to the top. But I get these gut feelings of when things are going to happen, and I knew that was going to be a score on that goal. And unfortunately, it was the momentum shifter for Reno. That's what they needed.
Well, because a few minutes after that, then all of a sudden they had another shot on goal just before the whistle's blown to half. And, you know, luckily, United escaped out of their 1-1. So, if you think about it, like, what would we say about United's run of play? I mean, they kept Reno off of them for nearly 40 minutes. So, obviously, we know that in there were the obvious things that we would consider probably flaw factors. I mean, too much movement or times where we didn't strike, you know, and chances were missed. And even by the end of that half, we went from having the possession of 66% to their 34 to, like, basically being right down the middle, more or less. I mean, I think we maybe had 54%, they were saying, however they managed that. But so obviously, like, a first half of play, we're doing well. I mean, we would like to have been up by more scores, but that's what we got. We had 6 shots, 1 on target. They had 5 shots with 2 on target. So then we go into the second half, okay? And something that's really stuck out to me is aerial duels. We don't really do really good at aerial duels. Every time the ball is sent up high, we never are able to win those duels to get those second balls or third balls. So what do you think we have to do to combat against teams who are really focused on sending everything to the air? I mean, we see this a lot with Austin in the past, and we've seen it with a little bit with Tulsa as well. So,
does Phoenix Rising play this type of game?
They do send a little bit over the top.
Because I know Minnesota United did that when we played them in the Lamar Hunt Cup. They just sent the ball straight over our defenders, and they played. They made us play catch up with them, and I think that's what has been our biggest Achilles heel. Actually, is
teams with pace,
teams with quickness, mm-hmm. teams with fast strikers, guys with. Oh, I wouldn't say the ability to outrun our defense, but it seems like our defense plays up a little too much. I don't know what you think, but I think our defense. I don't know. When I haven't seen too much soccer in my lifetime, but every game I've seen, like I've seen in the EPL or the La Liga and stuff like that, I see the defenders not play too far up. Like, none of them cross that white line as much. I don't know if you guys see that midfield line.
Yeah, I definitely do see that.
I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
I see a couple guys go, maybe the wings, but normally the center D stays, one of them. Anyway, I know they take turns.
Yeah, I mean, Reno was playing on a diamond, so they did have a holding mid, and they did send their outside guys up a lot. And that's where we saw a lot of the speed coming from Reno, because they really did take advantage of using their speed against, like, some of our backs that didn't have that speed. And that was something that Weehan said going into when I sat down with him. Something he did say was that, you know, places where we could be exposed as if, in fact, they did use their speed, but if they were able to keep the ball with the center backs, that they could mainly get them to probably make some bad decisions, and ultimately they'd be able to kind of bring numbers up on them, which is what they were shooting for. So let's talk about Weehan's infamous goal at 50 minutes, since you guys had kind of alluded to it. So Moore has a nice feed to Weehan, but it's too early, but still it was a good pass. I mean, obviously between these two. It's called offsides ultimately. But
if it wasn't.
And you know, and I have to say, I didn't think that sitting where I was sitting about midfield. But looking at the replays, he was like over by a step. But it was still pretty, and it still looks nice. But I mean, if we got that, I mean, how do you think things would have went?
It's a momentum shifter. It's always going to be a momentum shifter, and that's going to be the difference. If you even talk about it to anybody, you say Weehan's goal that was taken away, you're going to talk about that's what killed us. That blew the door wide open for Reno, because they now know that they had the momentum going in. And from my vantage point, he didn't look offsides. There was a defender. He was being held by a defender. I mean, they were right next to each other. Like you said, maybe a step, but come on.
They had a very tight wall right there. Those three defenders that kept that space very, very tight. You know?
Yeah, I didn't think so. Again, I was kind of far from the play, but it would have. It was going to give us more motivation. And, you know, it changed it. And like Josh said, Reno was happy about that and took the opportunity. And it was unlucky for us, but it keeps happening. You know, the refs.
We're getting hometown in our hometown.
Yes. So we keep seeing, you know, the refs making bad calls. It's not to blame, but it keeps happening.
No, this officiating crew was awful.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because honestly, like, I know, like we're echoing the same sentiment that, you know we asked Troy, and it's even got to the point in press conferences where I don't even ask about refs anymore. But it's like, how could you? Okay, you played the same game in this game that you played against the last two opponents. Now, mind you, this is a number three team, so it's a little different on the competition. I have some thoughts about that. But I'm thinking there are clearly some calls that were not made, you know, or we're divas, because either the other team is not stopping to like raise their hand every time something goes wrong. It's like they almost just used to the bad officiating, and it's every team
favor.
That comes in does the same thing. No one, you know what I'm saying? No one really contests it.
It kind of went both ways in my head for a couple minutes. There was one where Frater really did flop. Okay, he really LeBron James that very well. he was right in front of the net, and they called him, or they called somebody for something, for pushing him or something like that. But he did flop. I'm not going to lie. Frater, you need to work on it. Like, even the guy called him out. The goaltender stopped, told him, you know, I won't say it because there's children listening, like Adam Nish. little kids listening. But, you know, he did get... The goaltender even called him dropped the F-bomb on him and told him to stop effing around and stuff like that. And the one that really pissed me off is they really called it on Sandoval when Reno got out of control running for the ball off that corner kick. Mm-hmm. And the dude literally jumped in the air and flew over Sandoval's shoulder, landed on the ground, and they called Sandoval for it.
Oh, yeah.
I have it on my Snapchat. Like, I still recorded that, and I watch it over and over. The dude was reckless. Sandoval just literally put up his shoulder to avoid getting hit. The dude flipped head over heels over him. It wasn't Sandoval's fault at all. And they called it on Sandoval.
Right. They said, like, he basically kind of pulled like a...
What did the referee say? I heard him say in the corner, because Sandoval asked what happened. And the ref told him that he didn't give an opportunity for the player to land on his feet.
It was like a bad charge. Like, you know how, like, in basketball, there's this...
It was a flop. It was a LeBron flop. Like...
It was
a reckless play on Reno's part.
Yeah,
how that gets called on Sandoval. I'm kind of glad. I mean, it's disgusting, but deep down inside, I was really happy that our fans flipped off the referees. Like,
it was
on the outside, I was like, "Ooh, that's bad for us," but on the inside, I was like, "I want to join in."
It was like trying to watch Shaq set a pick and somehow keep his momentum from, you know, being more of like a charge. So
that's right. Adam said on that one for Frater flopping, that's when a defender got called for a yellow.
Ah.
I'm not going to lie. It really was a flop.
Shout out to Adam Nish. So at 52 minutes, Schmidt makes a poor decision. He gives up the ball to Herzog, and Mizell sort of recovers. Like, Mizell's kind of backing up. This is where he's on that 1v1 situation. And ultimately, Mizell makes the save. Right, exactly. At this time, Tete is like in the back of the net, kind of.
He gets behind him and gets to the pole immediately. And I think he's trained for that. I've seen him do that a few times where he just runs to take one of the posts. And, you know, luckily, Cody got there.
So then this leads to a corner kick for Rena, ultimately, because it goes out on Cody. So at 54 minutes, Richards just gets a thin slice of this kick, this corner kick, and ultimately heads the ball into the goal. So now it's 2-1 Reno. I mean, I watched the replay several times, and I don't know how he got it, but he got just enough to like send that ball in and a wedge. So we go down 2-1, and not even a few minutes later, there's a ball sent out. Hamilton's chasing down, so it's kind of a 50-50 ball. Reno gets the turnover, and Herzog gets in behind Schmidt and blasts one right by Mizell. So we go down 3-1 at this point.
What was the two goals in a matter of how many minutes?
It's like a matter of like 5 or 6 minutes.
5 or 6 minutes?
Yeah.
It's not good, man.
What's that?
It's not good.
No, right. So they score two goals under us. What could they have done differently?
I mean, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to the groups, but people are criticizing Cody Mizell pretty harshly. And the defense. I saw one guy say on the group that this defense is ridiculous, that Troy doesn't know what he's doing when it comes to defense. And, you know, of course you're going to get those fans. But what it was is Cody always seems to get the bad bounces, the unlucky bounces go his way. Like, it just... You can't blame Cody for anything. I mean, it's a team effort, and if people want to blame Cody, you know, that's shame on you for blaming him, because he did an amazing job. It's hard to play. You know, I've watched, you know, I hate bringing up other sports, but I've watched hockey so many times in my life, and I saw this with the Anaheim Ducks last year where poor John Gibson had to stop 80 shots a night because the defense just couldn't get back. And I'm seeing this with the United. I'm seeing them... Cody's having to play all by himself because there's no defense to help him out. So if anything, maybe there needs to be an adjustment where defense needs to figure out what they need to do to get somebody back there. Maybe put Hamilton back on defense for a couple games, especially now that we need him. Because I know he did a very well job of being a defenseman. Maybe we need something back there, but you can't put all the blame on Cody on this one.
I definitely think that There needed to be a little bit more communication, but I'm sure that happened so fast. I mean, the ball was sent out, and then essentially Hamilton chases it down, think about the sequence, and then he tries to at least corner it to where he could like kind of get behind it, but at the same time it's taken away, and then there's a through ball, kind of like the through ball we saw in Oklahoma. It's just already past everyone. So at this point, they have... the back line set, you know, so anyone would be offsides, but because the ball's coming through, I mean, it was just speed. I mean, they couldn't stop Herzog. He's already by them. You know, and all you see in the broadcast is Schmidt going, oh, no, you know, so it's hard, but it's like, it's not any one person's fault. It's just...
it's a group effort.
Yeah.
And why can't we stop speed? Why? I mean, can anybody give me an answer why we can't stop speed?
Well,
aren't your defensemen supposed to be some of the quickest in the game?
It's so it's some not, of them. Not necessarily. What they're supposed to do is set the wall. So they're supposed to set the offsides trap. Well,
the other teams are the wall of Jericho, or like we're the wall of Jericho, and the team's Joshua and his soldiers, because they're knocking that wall down every time.
Well, but it's not that, though, because what it is about the wall is that if you saw it in the Oklahoma matches, there were several times when it was just the back two. It was just Tete and Schmidt. So between them two, obviously they can communicate and say, hey, let's scoot up, and kind of catch them offsides, right? But it's that run of play that's happening there where possession changes, and they might be caught up high at that point, to the point where, you know, essentially when Herzog comes through, he just happens to get that angle on him, that diagonal run where it's just him and Cody. You know, maybe Cody would have played a little bit off the line.
Too much.
Oh, yeah.
Way too much.
And not to mention forwards. I mean,
yeah,
there's some really, really fast ones. And like you said, if they push up, it's going to be really hard. There's really nothing that can stop a forward with speed.
Yeah. I mean,
by the time the defense gets back, There's no way.
I mean, what you're seeing is the difference between a top-tier table team like Reno and Colorado Springs or Oklahoma City. Like, you know,
let me ask you something. If Suggs was there, would that those have happened?
I don't think that they would happen, but you got to think about where it happened. It happened in the center. So the ball went through the middle, you know. And if they were up high and the ball went through, as soon as the ball goes through, I mean, the guy is still onside when that ball is being shot back there. So he then hits a speed burst. So think about someone like Frater. Frater has the same speed burst. He plays it on, and the minute that it's out there, he just shoots up, and they are unsuspected. And that's right. What we're dealing with is a transition. We couldn't stop him on transition.
Well, maybe in the offseason we need to look for a defender with a little speed. I mean, it's the only way we're going to stop it. That's how teams are beating us. It's the only way they're beating us, is they're beating us to the ball. And I think if Reno didn't get that one, I think, and our goal got taken away, we have a 2-2 draw.
And that was unfortunate because we didn't have any space really between Schmidt and Mizell. If we went back and looked at it, it wasn't like the amount of space that we usually use. But let's move on, right? So go into the 57th minute. Frater comes in for Estrada. And I have this as like a milestone marker because, you know, the past couple of games, Frater has come in nearly towards the end of the match. And I'm pretty sure Troy was doing that so that he would make an appearance. So ultimately, he would come in, not get a card, and essentially be able to get cards rescinded. Okay, but he's coming in a lot sooner than he needs to come in. So at this point, I know Josh has probably got a thought when Frater's coming in earlier than
no,
normal.
No, sorry, I was laughing. I'll save it for the Q&A, but...
Okay. All right, so then let's move on then, okay? Brief minute, because I just thought this was let's get it on moment. So Weehan's coming in for a drive, gets tripped, right? Galindo takes a huge, healthy shot at the ball, which goes in his face. And, of course, I mean, I'm going to get up too and be pretty pissed.
Oh, Weehan, where it kicked Weehan in the face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets up.
I saw Weehan grab throat, and I was like, oh, gosh. This is going to be...
It's going down.
I thought me and Adam were like, oh, this is like the best part of the game. Or the fight. No, Weehan literally got up and choked him. Like,
I don't think we've ever seen that.
I've never seen Weehan get that upset.
I mean, just overall, United, I don't think they've gone too physical.
No, I've never seen Weehan even lay a hand on anybody before.
Hey, all I know is that if I'm in a dark alley, like, I got Weehan in my back pocket. That's all I'm saying.
I can hear what he was saying. Let me show you what he was saying. Bleep, 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 bleep. That's all I heard. Because we can't cuss on the radio. But that's what Weehan... I've never seen Weehan curse before. I've heard Frater, I've heard Santi curse before. I've never heard Weehan until he grabbed his throat and told him what he did. And I was kind of like, you know, Weehan's the sweetest, nicest guy. When we go to the press conferences and we meet him, that was not Weehan. That was the devil that took over Weehan.
Oh, come on. Lethal
but
Lobos,
you have
man.
Every right to be. Like, why right, are you, yeah. The whistle blows, why are you even touching that ball if you're a defender? The whistle blew, why are you kicking it? And you're telling, oh, my bad. Like... Come on now, you gotta play smart. And why was it a yellow and not a red?
Right.
He could have physically gave Weehan a concussion.
Yeah, that is true.
That's a player endangerment. That it should have been a red card. We should have been 2 men up.
So right, and so let's go into this. A few moments later is the questionable set, right? So obviously there's a set piece. This leads to like a ball being deflected to the near the foul line, right? So this is where Berntjes goes up for it, like you said, and Sandoval's under him. From my vantage point, I was like, okay, I didn't see the whole body collision thing. From my vantage point, I saw one guy in the air touch the ball. And so I was like, I don't know how it went off of Sandoval. But I don't know. Like, I know we've already talked about it. I'm not going to get too crazy about it. But definitely feel like it was really hard for us to get back into this match. There was even a point when we went up a man. So in the 80th minute, Partida got his second yellow. So we go up a man. And this is about, I think, I noticed about 85 minutes. I'm like, okay, well, we're up a man. This is kind of a scenario where can we turn over a couple of goals? That obviously doesn't happen.
Let's talk about that red card real quick.
Okay, let's talk about it.
What was up with the defender not walking off the field? Or what's the guy that got the red? Why wasn't he walking off the field?
Where was he going?
That's what I want to know.
Oh, where was he going?
Yeah, did you guys see that?
Like, well, he had to go off of the nearest point, but he wasn't going anywhere like to a locker room or anything. He was just, I think he was taking
up. He has to exit completely.
Where was he going though? Because he was going, acting like he was going towards the bench and then towards the other net.
Was he taking the long route off the field to waste time?
Yeah.
Definitely. So that's probably what.
You get kicked out of a game, and your number one thing is, I'm going to kill the clock as best as I can.
Right, right. We know that opponents are really good at killing time at Isotopes
Park. Me and Adam were laughing hysterically because before the game, me and Adam were going down the tunnel, and that dude was dancing on a pole.
What?
Yeah, so we're like, that dude is so weird. Like,
did you get that on Snapchat?
Oh, we should have gotten that Snapchat because he was literally like dry humping the pole, and I was like, dude, what are you doing? Me and Adam looked at each other like, you do you, boo. Like, but
he had a lot of energy.
Yeah. So when he got off the field, I was kind of like, wasn't that the dude that was humping the pole earlier? But yeah, that needs to be something the USL discusses is when it comes to killing the clock. Mm-hmm. You know,
they always get us. They always get us with
it never
rolling, rolling on the ground, and then they especially get up like nothing. Dose.
Yeah, but you know, it's
part of the game.
This is why I watch hockey more than soccer.
We've asked that question during a press conference, and they said it's part of the game. It's part of the game.
Yeah, it's something that needs to be discussed though, because that just it ruins the game. Because
yeah.
Do they really add it to penalty minutes or the
no, they extra don't. Not fairly. They don't.
No.
So I was looking up something while you guys were talking. I was looking up yellow cards because I know that we had gotten some. Obviously, we talked about Samson earlier. And as my phone loads here. Oh, yeah. Moar had got one ultimately. So by him getting this card.
Does he have two now? He has to miss next match?
Yeah. So that's... that's definitely going to hurt us.
Is he missing one or two?
He's missing one match.
Okay. One match. Yes.
Oh, against Phoenix, too.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's missing that match against
and then
Phoenix.
People are asking, you know, you said it earlier, why Frater wasn't going into the game earlier. I think it's perfect why he's not. Let me tell you why. Because he's already sitting on that one where he's one yellow card away from a two-game suspension. And we need him desperately. And I think it's a good call by Troy because it keeps him level-headed. I think when we see him play full games, he gets tired, you know, irritated with other people, and that's when he picks up the stupid yellow cards.
Well, and you know, also in addition to that, like, he's sitting, like you said, he's sitting in that real high category by himself, so they can't obviously resend too many cards because then they put him right back in that spot, so they got to keep him afloat in there, you know?
So it's smart by Troy to keep not put him in the full game because that's when we see the bad boy Frater come out and...
Right.
You know, because even when he came in, 55th minute, he was calm. I didn't hear him curse. Usually I hear him swearing up a storm, but even when he tripped and fell, he walked away. He didn't say anything, and that's the Frater we need to see.
Right.
Because we cannot afford to lose him and Santi. You know, unfortunately, we are losing Santi, but if Frater got a yellow, oh my gosh, can you imagine this team without Frater
or
Santi?
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Oh, yeah, exactly. So let's switch gears. So obviously... We don't get any points from this match, which we really needed. So as we transition, obviously that was our Draw Motors revved up recap. But as we transition into this week's preview of Phoenix Rising, we talked in previous weeks and we talked about how obviously, you know, getting draws from Reno and Phoenix were ideal. We're at a point now going into this match where the total number of points we can earn is 15. We have 5 matches left. We're currently sitting with 40 points, and the table has us sitting in 8th place currently. Austin sitting above us, and LA sitting below us, and then El Paso sitting below them with San Antonio just underneath the 10 mark. So I was looking at it a little bit earlier, and so we're really at a point where it's win or go home. And, I mean, that being said, it's like San Antonio has a real key matchup this week against Tulsa. The most points San Antonio can earn going out is 53, okay? So if they lose against Tulsa, then the most points they can totally earn is 50 points. And so that should ultimately eliminate them in the next couple of matches, because if we don't, if we weren't to get a result against Phoenix this week, like if we couldn't walk away with a point, then we would only be able to earn 12 points going forward. And if we won out, that would put us at 52. So clearly San Antonio would be out at that point. But before I get too much into that, let's just talk about Phoenix. I mean, we've already seen Phoenix week to week. They were on a huge tear. They won 20 straight matches in a row. Just played Fresno the other night. Lost their streak 2-1. They lost their streak, I should say. It was a 2-1 match that Fresno wins. But the way that Fresno wins, to me, kind of concerned me a little bit, because Phoenix had two PKs back-to-back where Asante kicked the ball and it hits one of the Fresno defenders in the hand. So there's handball each time. And the goalkeeper, the first time, makes the save, clearly. Second time, goalkeeper dives, but it hits the post. And so Fresno ends up winning this match. But I'm concerned about Asante kicking balls at our
hand level,
at the hand level of our guys. And
smart,
right? It's so smart.
That's brilliant strategy.
That's a good point.
Brilliant. That's how
especially
they win,
because everybody's gonna be taller than him. So
right,
guess where the ball's gonna go.
Didn't we have a handball situation in Phoenix during the Lamar Hunt?
I think we might have.
I think during the Lamar Hunt match, we had a handball situation where I don't think it was him, but somebody else on the team hit one of our guys on the hand, and that's what they aim for. And it's a brilliant strategy. It's dirty, it's nasty, but I love it.
But
I think
it
it's a great one. It's going to work.
But look what happened. They weren't able to...
They're the freaking Patriots of this league, you know?
Right. The Alabama, I know. So Phoenix is 22-3-5 overall. They're 10-3-2 on the road. So their three losses came on the road. Their top scorers, obviously, Solomon Asante with 22 goals, 15 assists. His stats are crazy. He's got 91 shots, the most of the team. But he's got 80 chances created. So it's like... obviously, very giving. He's not taking it all himself. Adam John's got 15 goals. Junior Fleming's got 14 goals with 7 assists. Now, Phoenix did win the regular season title, and they were a win away from getting the Supporters' Shield. I'm guessing on their next win, they can still get that. They scored 62 goals in 20 straight games. So, I mean, they went on a tear. And so that's...
And now that they lost, they get to face us. And they're pissed.
And here's the thing, right?
Is Phoenix, that going to be in our favor? Or are they going to come with...
They're going to come with heat.
I honestly think that it's just another situation of another top-tier team with speed on top. You have Asante, you have Flemings, you have John. And that's not all they have. But if you consider that they're going to be really looking to take advantage of pace on us, they're going to be looking to get into the back of our defense. To me, I think Troy really has to spend a lot of time working on really setting that offside trap higher and maybe baiting them with a generous amount of that back pitch, because it needs to look like the way it looked in Oklahoma City. That's my thought. What do you think?
I was thinking just right now, it popped in my head, what happened to Yearwood? He is really fast, I think. Would that be an option, maybe?
As a defensive?
Defensive.
Oh, defensive back. That would be an option. I didn't see any show notes to be able to see if there was any sort of an injury for him, or if he just didn't make the 18. I mean, I'm sure before they went into this match, they didn't know about a migraine in warm-ups, so I'm sure Samson was...
Wasn't Troy saying that it happened like 5 minutes before warm-ups? Like, it just... It happens.
So he had his lineup ideally set. I mean, it is a little alarming
because
that we don't
have defenders.
They
announced the starting lineups, they had Suggs in it. So they didn't even know until game time that Suggs wasn't going to be playing.
And here's the thing. I mean, we know going forward that they've got to be thinking about filling out their defender position a little bit more, because they only really have one for every spot. I mean, we don't have a deep roster. But Phoenix, I mean, obviously... like I said, speed is something that we're going to have to address. I mean, they got to set. The defense has got to talk. We can't be caught in positions where balls are where there's three balls, where there's that speed hitting it, because I don't think we'll be able to catch up with that. They have a really good defensive back line. I mean, obviously, they didn't allow very many goals in that run of 20 matches. And again, this is a top-level team, so this isn't like us playing
OKC. They're the defending Western Conference champions. They're playing like the defending Western Conference champions.
And they are, yeah.
They're most likely going to be, again, the Western Conference champions, and probably the USL champions. You know, because look at it, they're 71 points. Right. And I think that's 21 more than the Eastern Conference has. So it's like
no one's gonna
touch this team and
catch up.
We need to make a statement. We need a draw here.
Right.
I think a draw against the Phoenix Rising will be just key. Yes, we do need to. It's do or die now. This game is actually gonna be the one important game for us. We lose, chances of winning a playoff spot go to slim.
It's gonna be. So here's the thing, like. We have to get a point here.
We have to tie. If we had
gotten a point with Reno, maybe we could have withstood the loss here. But if we don't get a point from this, I mean, we essentially make it attainable for a San Antonio to still get in. It could very well be that if we don't get this result and then somehow manage to tie somewhere else where we should have won, that we will be just trying to get a 10 spot in the table. And so I am concerned, and I this is a thought that I had, and this will kind of round off, I think, a preview, because what do you think we can do to get a point? Like, what do you think United can do to get that point?
What did we do in the previous two matches against Phoenix?
Well, we drew in those matches.
But what did we do defensively?
Well, if you think about the first time around, I mean, that's the one where it was a 3-3 draw. We were ahead each time in their place. Now, they're undefeated at home, right? So we had one of those three draws, okay? So, I mean, essentially, we had to definitely mark Asante. They weren't this team, though, either. They weren't this team. They were struggling to get a win at that time.
But you're coming into Albuquerque. What is one thing Albuquerque has that Phoenix doesn't?
So we have the audience. We have the attendance. We know that.
No, it's not the attendance.
What else do we got?
We got the elevation.
Ooh.
I was going to say the weather.
The weather, the climate. We have elevation. Phoenix is what? Sea level or just a little above sea level? Run them. Make them breathe. Make them have a problem breathing up here.
So they're going to have to spread out the ball, obviously. That's going to be one thing. I mean, there's still the pace that Phoenix has.
If you're playing West Coast teams, this is what you need to do to beat them, because, you know, playing sports here all my life, I've had difficulty breathing here. But when I go down to Phoenix, LA level, I'm fine. Like, it's just like, whew, this is the greatest thing on earth. But if you come here in Albuquerque,
I can relate.
There's even a saying in the pit when you walk in there, you'll experience fatigue, dizziness, drowsiness. It hits you. And New Mexico United need to run them. Just run the crap out of them.
Come to Albuquerque, get sleep apnea?
That's the way you beat them here in Albuquerque, is you run them.
And get the allergies.
You make them
play around this time of year, too.
Exactly.
I mean, yes.
You make them chase the ball. You make, on offense, this might be a game where it's okay to pass the ball 538 times. But you've got to play monkey in the middle with this team. And that's how you drain them. You wear them out. Kill them with the elevation. That's how you win.
So we really got to hope that Isotope's pitch is looking smooth, that we don't have any divots or anything that's going to cause the ball to not roll full rotation.
I must say it looked really good. The pitch looked good this last time, and I think the Isotopes, they're done, so I don't think they have to mess with it very much. So I think that they're just going to...
Some parts of the
that.
Pitch looked a little, even the
a little bit, but not like.
But even the parts
back.
Where the Isotopes play on the grass, it popped up a couple times
during an Isotopes game. Is that what you're saying?
No, during our game on Friday. But the outfield where it is grass, where they don't have to put grass down, it was popping off the grass.
Oh, is that right?
So, Cody was kicking it, and you saw turf fly up. So
oh,
and we're expecting nothing but rain this week. So
it's gonna be a little. going to
be a little wet and soggy on that field, but hopefully the field crew takes care of it.
But, you know, the fact that they're not messing with it as much just because Isotopes is done might help, or hopefully they get a hand on it.
So some closing thoughts before I go around the table to get our predictions, and you'll record our predictions on this paper this week. So closing things, just playoffs, obviously we know Phoenix, Fresno, and Reno have all clinched playoff spots. Spots 4 through 6 look like they're going to be a battle between SAC, OC, and Real Monarch. Spots 7 through 10, currently it's Austin, New Mexico, LA, and El Paso. Again, like I said, if we can't get a result, we're going to give life to San Antonio. Really important things for us to really keep an eye on this week. We really need to look at the result between San Antonio and Tulsa. We need to hope that Tulsa doesn't even let San Antonio get a point. And then we need to get that point, and we need to close out. Unfortunately, we're in a position based on head coach Troy Lesane's focus of one match at a time that now it's kind of like he's created this sort of hype monster where every match matters, and if we don't make it, then it might lead to some upset. But my thought over the weekend was, what if this isn't the team that's supposed to get the cup? What if they already know that? And what if their goal was just to make it to the playoffs and just host a match or just play one? Kind of like the Open Cup. I mean, they knew that they weren't going to win the Open Cup. They were just focused on getting to the fifth round. And as it was, they obviously made it. But I'm wondering if, in fact, this isn't the 93 Bulls team and they are okay with that as long as it happens within the first 3 years. So that's kind of a provocative thought I want to leave us with to think about over the week. So now I want to go around the table and get scoreline predictions. Josh, we'll start with you.
I'm pulling the old Carrillo maneuver here. I'm picking Phoenix.
Okay.
Hoping that New Mexico United win, but I'm going 4-2 Phoenix.
Okay, Josh has got 4-2 Phoenix. Any idea who gets the goals for New Mexico with those two that you got there?
Freighter and Weehan.
Okay. All right, Adri, you're up now. What's your prediction?
I am going to be more optimistic.
No, but this has worked for me before. I picked... Didn't it work?
Okay, as long as it works for you?
Yes.
I'm gonna leave it
alone. Didn't work for the Broncos this weekend. But
I guessed it a couple weeks ago. I was on target. So okay. I'm going to be very optimistic and say 2-1 United.
Okay. Who gets your two goals?
I'm going to say, yes, Freighter. If Sandoval, I would say Sandoval. If he starts or even comes in as sub, I think he's going to make another one.
Okay. I am not going to give a scoreline on this show, and I'll tell you why.
Come on, Chris.
I'll tell you why. So in a couple days, myself and more likely Seth, if he's available, will get on a show with a couple of the guys from Phoenix Rising's podcast and do kind of a match preview with them. So I don't want to necessarily let out my sort of prediction on this show and then have to like...
Okay. This is your own show, and yet you're talking to the Phoenix Rising show?
Yeah, we do the collaborations, so...
No.
Yeah. So we've done collaborations with other podcasts to create content, which is...
Yeah, give them content to talk about, not your own show. Weak.
Well, we'll actually have the audio played on our show, because we'll get the media from them, and then we'll upload it into our channel feed. So we'll have that planned for them, hopefully by Friday. For our listeners, so they can hear that conversation. So I'm not going to give mine.
Boo. So, you can't do that. You can't do that.
But I will. So that being said, that's gonna wrap up our preview. We're going to leave the EPL talk for when Seth is back with us. I know Seth likes.
Can I just say real quick? Here, Manchester United suck, dude.
So
losing to West Ham like that? Come on, man.
So again, we'll leave the English Premier League talk.
Yeah, that's why you didn't want to talk about it, because the team sucks.
For next week with Seth, and then when he's back, I'm sure we'll get into the last couple of weeks. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break, and here's a word from our sponsor.
Motors is dedicated to providing the ultimate automobile buying experience. Doral Motors is your number one source for buying quality pre-owned vehicles. In addition, we offer a full array of financing options to meet your needs. Visit Doral Motors today at 6701 Lomas Boulevard, Northeast, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Or... Doral Motors is dedicated to providing the ultimate automobile buying experience. Doral Motors is your number one source for buying quality pre-owned vehicles. In addition, we offer a full array of financing options to meet your needs. Visit Doral Motors today at 6701 Lomas Boulevard, Northeast, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Or make the phone call to 505-907-9549. Or visit Doral Motors online at doralmotorsnm.com.
Welcome back to We Are Seek and Strive Podcast. Here is your host, Chris Walker.
Now, we didn't say this at the top of the show. I guess we just got into this. We got swept up, but my other co-host, Seth Biedolf, cannot be here tonight. He is actually on his way back to New Mexico. So, Seth, we miss you. We hope you get back safe. We look forward to having you back on the next episode of We Are Seek and Strive Podcast. And Alicia... was not able to be with us here tonight either. She had something of a family emergency come up, and so our thoughts and prayers are definitely with her and her family, and we look forward to having you back as well, Alicia. Okay, now we're going to jump into our favorite segment, our full-time fan Q&A, brought to you by Roadrunner Law Firm. And Josh, looks like you got a lot of questions over there, so why don't you go ahead and start us off.
Alrighty. First, the shout out. It looks like a California number, so I'm thinking I know who this is, Chris. I love you. Seek and Strike. That's what she said. Okay. Let's see here. This one's from Stephanie. She says, totally missed you guys last week on a Monday. I was super sad that you guys weren't able to be there, but I do understand that circumstances do come up. Don't you ever leave me again like that on a Monday night.
Stephanie, where were you on Wednesday?
Yeah. She's saying, guys, it's do or die for New Mexico United now. They definitely, I agree with Josh, they definitely need to tie at least for this game and win out for the rest of the season. It's a very favorable schedule for New Mexico after Phoenix. I don't see any reason why we can't get a playoff spot, but it can't be any more lousy play or laziness when it comes to the back line. It's now really do or die for New Mexico. Love the show. Hoping that you guys continue this during the playoff talk.
Well, thank you for the comment, Stephanie. We definitely will be continuing it through the playoff talk, and we will, I'm sure, come up with other things to do even beyond that. We appreciate your comment. We definitely do agree that United needs to get a point from this, and we definitely do hope that the back line sets up the trap correctly and that we can catch... Phoenix off guard.
Okay, so this one is kind of what I was talking about with some of those fans commenting on the group pages. This one's from Anonymous. I don't have, I just have a number here. It says, guys, I really think that Weehan needs to be benched a couple games to get clear his head, I guess. He's had a rough few games where he's had open opportunities and missed them. I also think that maybe Cody Mizell needs to take a break. What do you guys think? I think this is just personally, I'm free to my free opinion on this, but I personally think that those two need a break because I don't think we've seen any other goaltender but Frater, or excuse me, Mizell. Sorry, I don't know why I said Frater. Mizell, I think he needs a break. What do you guys think? I love this team to death, but I think there's just some things that need to be corrected.
I don't like the idea personally. I like Mizell a lot and his style. But maybe. I mean, I'm to the point where I think that maybe giving Ben the opportunity. He might come up with, you know, a lot of motivation. That might be something that I'm also, you know, maybe supporting in the next match or two. Like I said, I really like Cody. He's done an amazing job. And it's a little unfair when people attack him because sometimes he's a hero and sometimes he's the bad guy. But if you think about it, the ball has to go through 10 other guys to get to him. So let's just don't be unfair and blame him, you know, for all the errors made back there. I think that, yes, that'll be a good option to switch him up maybe for a match.
I think that you may have been able to see Bowery if we had gotten results in other matches. Maybe it might have been advantageous for Troy at that point to rest up certain guys that heading too. Into the playoffs. But I think at this point, you know, that sort of option really isn't really there. I think that, do we want to bench Weehan? I don't necessarily think so. I mean, he's creating the chances for our guys up top. So if you take him out, then you're going to basically be looking at either Ryan Williams and Sandoval combo, or even Frater and Sandoval. And we know how the nation feels about all the different combinations. But I think when it comes down to it, you have to give Weehan the freebie because he played his old club. And unfortunately, the emotion didn't go his way this time. So, next question.
Alrighty, guys. It was addressed right after it was said by the announcer. What is up with the curse chanting that awful word after we kick the goal, or the goal, the other team kicks the goal kick? I'm glad that the United announcer brought this up. I'm glad the security is now going to remove people who are caught saying it. But does this rely down on the head of the curse? I think that's what he is. Does that, man, this, sorry, I'm trying to decipher Miss Tex here, but I think he's trying to say, is that on the fault of the guy that runs the curse for allowing such behavior?
I'm going to go ahead and take this one. And we've addressed this before. So it's not the curse who's saying it. Just because because anyone can go on the internet and buy a scarf on the curse's website and it gets shipped to you. It gets to a point where obviously David Carl, who runs the curse, he can't necessarily control who buys a scarf and who wants to be in the section. Obviously, the section is very attractive because it's the one section where you can stand for 90 minutes and truly live in the game. So I wouldn't say that I've already addressed that. You know, it's not the curse saying it; it's folks that are standing in the sections that are saying it. I did hear when the broadcast was happening right after the first goal kick that they played that announcement about no hateful language, profanity, or homophobic slurs, racial slurs.
Are they talking about the Spanish word?
Yes.
You know, the one with the P.
Yeah. I also must jump into this one because it comes from way back. It's not new. It doesn't just happen here. I'm not justifying the word, but you see it from World Cups. You see it in Gold Cups. You see it in La Liga. You see it everywhere. They have tried to ban the word, to even penalize the teams, the managers, the coaches, and you name it. They've tried everything to eliminate the word. And it just spread. And even one of the World Cups was really, really serious about it, and they still couldn't. So I really think it's not the curse, and it's not new. It's been happening for years.
Yeah,
and they have tried, and they just can't get rid of it.
Yeah, and we've definitely fielded that question a couple of times on here. We know that there are folks in the nation group that are adamant about keeping it around, probably because of their own. But when it comes down to it, I mean, obviously we don't condone it ourselves, and you know, and it's one of those things, unfortunately, that it continues to happen. I mean, I thought it was good for the club to play the announcement right after the first goal kick to try to nip it in the bud. And I honestly didn't even remember hearing it once during the gameplay. I guess I was so focused on just what was happening. But
the person that texted in saying, unfortunately, what sucks is my kids were at the game. The next day they went to their own soccer game and chanted it as soon as they... the other team kicked the ball, and unfortunately the coach wasn't too happy, so it sucks that our kids have to hear it, and then they think it's funny, and they go and do it themselves when we have to tell them the sad reality of what that word really means.
It definitely does suck that your kids repeated it, and if they took it away. I'm not a parent myself, but I mean, I empathize with the fact that something like that can emulate. And of course, it doesn't help with the movies that are coming out either in today's world as well. But hopefully, you're able to shield them from some of that stuff, and hopefully, it gets better.
Alrighty, this one comes from our own Adam Nish.
Adam, shout out.
He says, okay guys, most importantly, we need to discuss the price of hot dogs at games. $11 for a hoagie is pure robbery.
Hey, I gotta know, Adam, was it a regular size Frank, or was it like the foot long one? Like the Frankfurter?
Dude, the prices of everything over there are incredibly high.
That's why you guys got a pregame.
$10 for a beer is like...
You have to eat before the game. Yes, you do have to.
That's why we got to go
over
there.
And bring your refill, your special cup to refill.
See, we got to get over... I mean, I'm sure you've already tailgated, but we got to get over to one of those Doral Motors Fiesta tailgates with the curse, because
we're
missing out
on
some free food. And if we didn't have the press box where we could get like burgers and hot dogs before games...
On the last tailgate, I got the popsicles, beer, and food. So you need to get there early.
Hey, shout out to United's Club for making sure we got like burgers, hot dogs, and those press box brownies that we love so much.
And then Adam also said that I had to remind you guys that me and Adam almost died three times from Freighter running into the boards, almost knocking us over, and the poor ball kid.
Were you reading that in third person?
Huh? Well, I'm just reading what he was saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he says, remind them that we almost died three times from Freighter. Yes, because me and Adam were, you know, we're back there behind those boards.
I wonder if Adam got the shot.
Flashing into them three times.
I wondered if he got the shot. I felt like Adam was, like, committed to getting that shot, too.
No, we were diving to save our lives, because even that poor ball kid got ran over. Like, he got hit by that sign. So. All right, and the last one is from Luis. He is from right here in Albuquerque. He is saying, guys, if we were to go into the playoffs, how does it work? Do the first two positions get a bye, and then the rest play each other out? How does the playoffs work, and where do you see New Mexico? I'm saying that we get at least a 10th spot.
Hey, Luis, thanks for the question. We really appreciate it, and thanks for listening into our show. So the way the playoffs work actually is, so there's 10 teams ultimately. That's where the dividing line is. So teams 7 through 10, they play a one-match play-in. So number 7 plays number 10, and number 8 plays number 9. And the teams that went from there basically are reseeded as the lower teams, the 7 and 8 team.
Oh, it goes like 1-8 versus 4-5 versus 3-6 and then 2-6.
Yeah,
if they get that way.
So after the play-in. So at that point, if, say, United was number 10 and they were to beat the number 7 team, they would be reseeded as the number 8 team because they're the lowest seed. So right now, as we know, we're sitting at number 8. And if we went out and the right things happen, I mean, because there are not that many matches left, but that's all there is left, and every week should tell whether or not we're in 8 or 9 or 10, which I see us either in 8 or 9. So I think that we're going to end up playing El Paso more than likely, or LA, is how I think we're going to play it. But again, like, it's kind of too soon because everyone's chasing the same amount of points. So if we should get through our play-in and we're seated at a number 8 team, we're playing Phoenix. So, I mean, it's either Phoenix or Fresno at this point if you get through the play-in. So, take your pick. Okay, so that's it for our full-time Q&A, or fan Q&A. We do appreciate your questions and comments. As always, thank you so much to Roadrunner Law Firm for bringing this segment to you. And we are going to go to another break and hear words from our sponsor, and we'll be back to talk about Lobo Women's Soccer in our last thoughts.
Where's the call, ref?
Yeah, that should have been a yellow.
They just never seem to get it right.
And the game continues.
If you have been hurt or injured by someone, you deserve the right call. Roadrunner Law Firm specializes in personal injury cases and wants you to get the right call. Raise up a yellow card if you've lost a loved one due to wrongful death, been in a car or motorcycle accident, been hurt by a drunk driver, or been hurt due to negligence of others. If the right call was not made, we'd like to hear from you. For more information, visit our website at www.roadrunnerlaw.com or make the call to Roadrunner Law Firm at 505-444-4321.
Welcome back to the We Are Seek and Strike podcast. Here is your host, Chris Walker.
Hey everyone, we're back and we're going to switch streams now and talk about Lobo Women's Soccer. Now, Adri Cortina has been obviously covering Lobo Women's Soccer. She's been doing the translations of the recaps as well. Adri, so what's going on lately with Lobo Women's Soccer?
Well, yeah, Chris, Lobo Women won 1-0 over New Mexico State over in Las Cruces. Woo-hoo! Yeah, so shout out to them. It was a tight game, but majority of the time, our girls kept possession. So that leads into Mesa Walters scoring a goal, assisted by Leilani Baker. Those girls are great. My favorite Baker. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but I really, really like this girl, not only playing but her assists. So Lobos took 12 shots in the first half and 16 in second half. A total of 14 were on frame. 9 Lobos took shots, and all 4 of Baker's shots were on frame. So see, this is what I'm saying about Baker. She's very accurate. Baker has 64% ratings of shots on frame, and 4 of Jaden Edwards' 6 shots were on frame. Edwards has a 46% rating of shots on frame. 3 of Jesse Hicks' 8 shots were on frame. So those are the stats on how this game went. Aggies took 1 shot in first half. They're very, you know, they've had very little possession. And 6 in second half, a total of 3 were on frame for them. The keepers, they didn't do a whole lot during the first. They weren't really required, but our Lobos keep, Malia made 3 saves, and Aggies goalkeeper Fong made the 13 saves.
Okay, so, man, that's incredible. I mean, the Lobos are still winning. I guess they've won the last 3 matches, right? So when you watch that match, What was the run of play? Like, how did the game build up?
First half was very, very, I guess we controlled. We controlled the whole game, if you want to put it that way. But it was kind of like in the middle, back and forth, a lot of fouls, a lot of outside balls. It kind of got frustrating, you know. But Lobos just had control and took possession majority of the time. It was a brick wall in the back. It was the girls, you know, like I said, Baker, Alicia had the chance to come in, and those girls were fast. They kept taking shots. Another one that I was impressed by was Jaden Edwards. First minute, and she was already taking shots at a goal. So it built up that way. It stayed that way for a while. In my opinion, nothing much happened. It was a lot of the same. After the third touch, New Mexico State lost possession, and it went back to Lobos, and it kept repeating itself throughout the first match. About another 15, 20 minutes of the second match as well.
Okay, so when the Lobos went up 1-0, did the match change at that point? Were the Aggies... Did they change their attack? Was there more of a threat, or did the Lobos continue their style of play, dominating possession.
I would say even after they scored, it stayed the same pace. It stayed the same. Aggies had a couple more chances, more in comparison to first half, but really there was not much going on there. Just Lobos kept their momentum.
Okay. So what's coming up for the Lobos?
We're looking into, I believe, Colorado State University. And this is at 4 p.m., and I believe that is this Saturday, correct? Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's correct, yeah.
And it's going to be broadcasted on the Mountain West Network.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's on Friday.
Is it Friday?
It's Friday.
Okay, excuse me. Yeah, so it'll be at 4 p.m. It's going to be in Colorado. So, and then they're back after that. But one more away game for them.
Okay. So, yeah, I was kind of looking at it a little bit, too, and right now, it looks like Boise State may be the team to beat. They've gone 8-1 in non-conference play.
Boise State's always the team to beat.
Josh loves the Boise State. So, yeah, you can catch that Lobos match against Colorado State on the Mountain West Network. That's the MW.com, I believe, right? So, well, thank you for that coverage. Alicia is not here to talk about high school girls soccer. I will give a little update about boys soccer. As far as, I guess, some of our locals, you know, we have high-performance player Gabe Legendre, who is in United's high-performance program. So he's playing at Cleveland High School, and Cleveland will host Rio Rancho at 6 p.m. on Wednesday this week, so they start their actual district play. And then they will also play against Atrisco Heritage on 115 on Saturday at APS Complex. And I'm particularly interested in offering a little extended coverage on our high-performance program players. So obviously Lamar Bynum, who plays for Rio Rancho, who's another high-performance player, will be kind of keeping tabs on those players through their district play this year as well. Just to kind of switch gears a little bit, and as we're kind of nearing the end of the show, again, I just want to remind you that that I, and more than likely Seth, will be jumping on a podcast Wednesday evening with the Rising as One gents to discuss the match preview. And again, that's going to be based on his availability. He doesn't know yet, haven't told him. And, you know, but I'm sure if he's available, he'll want to do it. We're going to get out of here, so I'm going to go ahead and start us off. So this show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors. We'd like to give a huge Seek and Strike thank you to Doral Motors and Roadrunner Law Firm for their continued support. We're always interested in teaming up with anyone that supports what we're doing at Seek and Strike Collective. If you'd like to talk about sponsorship, email us at seekandstrikecollective@gmail.com.
Chris, you kind of threw me under the weather, man. What am I?
Pay attention.
Oh, sorry, not good enough for you. Right here.
He has no mind.
Oh, I don't even know where you left off, man.
Oh my gosh!
This is a blooper.
So I read Seth's line.
Oh, okay. Sorry, everybody. I have Chris has got a. Start paying me here. Alrighty, so listen to all previous episodes of We Are Seek and Strike Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and CastBox. If you hear something you like, please consider subscribing so you never miss an episode. Please leave us an episode review on Apple Podcasts. For all your Seek and Strike Collective social media tags, check out our website at www.seekandstrikecollective.com/social media. Well, guys, that's going to do it for us here tonight. We are back next Monday right here at 8:30 p.m. Mountain Time. For those who are not here, Alicia and Seth, I hope you guys are doing well.
Chris, we missed you guys.
Chris and myself, and of course, oh, I just drew a blank on her name.
Adri Cortina.
Guys, come on, I'm tired.
Josh. Come on,
Josh. I need to get out of here.
He needs to go home and sleep.
All right, we are Seek and Strike Collective, guys, and you've been listening to We Are Seek and Strike Podcast. You guys have yourselves a great night. We'll see you next Monday. Take care, everybody.
the same. Cause girl, you came and changed the way I want, the way I go. I cannot explain the things I feel for you. But girl, you know it's true. I'll stay with me, I'll fulfill my dues, and I'll be all you need. Knew that love would bring.